Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome into Tom Curran's Patriots Talk Podcast featuring Phil Perry and, of course, the quarterback, Matt Castle. It's a year-end situation. Happy New Year to all of you. Getting ready to go headlong into 2021. Don't mind if I do. Okay, that's enough of that. We're going to take off the crown, tiara, and let's get right after it. Today on the pod, macro. Why are the Patriots here? It's an existential question. Also, offense. Do the Patriots have the belly for what it's going to take to get this offense into 2021? They've been going primitive. Next up, are the Jets a cautionary tale? We've looked at the Dolphins and the Bills as maybe having models for New England. And then finally, Matt Castle really liked this conversation last week on Pregame Live. His head nearly popped off his shoulders. Can Bill Belichick be on the clock for his job? All that and more on Happy New Year. Adam Vinatieri, the 40, he's
time world champion, and there ain't nothing you can do about it.
How are you doing, guys? We're actually taping this before New Year's Eve. So, Phil, what do you got planned?
Oh, huge plans. I think I'm going to be at home. Might order some chicken wings and probably go to bed at, 10:30, 11.
Oh, that sounds eventful.
Yeah. The guy, well, Matt Castle. Pandemic. It is a pandemic. And Phil is a dad of two really smalls, but Castle has five smalls. And my guess is down in Nashville tonight, you will hear the clack of pool balls. You will hear, you'll probably hear this.
A lot of that.
You might even have a hot tub situation out there.
We're going to get the hot tub going. We're going to do a big bonfire. We're going to get the fireworks going. It's going to be incredible. It's just going to be a downhearted Southern New Year's, and I can't wait for it.
It is going to be. You're not even lying, are you?
No, I'm not lying. Are you kidding me? We're going to rock and roll. But I've got, I'm already at my limit. We've got seven people in our family, so we can't have anybody come over to the house because they said you're limited to about only eight people, gatherings wise. So, but it'll still be awesome.
Fireworks, though?
Why not? Let's go.
You can't get ones that go along the street?
No, I got one of those pipes, that you can put the big ones in and shoot it up and
put in reverse, Tara. Put in reverse. All right. New England Patriots, 6-9 out of the playoffs, looking up at the rest of the conference. Why are they here? I think there's a lot of kind-hearted readings you can give on it. Yeah, it's the opt-outs. It's cap space. There are fact-based readings. Tom Brady left, and there's an issue there. But there are underlying personality issues as well. That why did the team go from where it was in 2017, 2018, to kind of having a roster that was on the downside? So for you guys, before we get into how they get out, talk a little bit about offense today. Why do you think they're here, Matt and Phil? Take it away, whoever.
I mean, there's a number of different reasons why. And like you said, you can go back to drafting, right? The situations like N'Keal Harry, they try to go out and they get better at that position in particular and just missed, right? Right now they've missed. And then you can look at, as we've talked about a number of different times, the preparation, understanding that Brady was getting close or that you guys were both moving in a different direction, mm-hmm. of making sure that you had a solid plan once he did leave to bring the next guy in or draft or go out and get a true veteran quarterback that you think fits your system rather than, panicking last minute, not realizing that Jared Stidham might not be the guy for you and going out and getting Cam, which look, the Cam experiment, it worked, early on. We thought that we saw something there. At the end of the day though, it just, they didn't surround him with enough weapons and he wasn't an effective enough passer.
Bill, following that, Phil, do you think that Bill's citing as his main talking point, at least for a reason, that, hey, we sold out the last 5 years. We won three Super Bowls, went to another, and went to a conference championship. What do you want from me? We have salary cap stuff. How much of a 100% percentage is that valid?
I think there's a fair percentage of it that's valid. But as you pointed out, like you go out and you spend a fair amount of money on somebody like Antonio Brown, but it's at the last minute because you're absolutely desperate at a position that's pretty vital. And that to me is what, you know, to get to your original question, Tom, how do we get here? I look at it as we all know what's happened to quarterback. We all know what's going on with the weapons around him. How do you get to the point that you have those pieces in places that are pretty important in today's NFL? Well, I think you're valuing things that might be different than what is valued across the NFL. And it doesn't mean you can't win that way, right? Like Bill Belichick built the first part of this dynasty on market inefficiencies, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that part of the reason I think, you know, his approach to free agency, Jonathan Kraft has said when they, you know, first started talking about football, it might've even been before he was with the Jets when he was with the team initially in 96 and they're talking about the cap. And then they actually interview him for the job and he becomes coach. That's one of the reasons he's here. And he brings on all these low cost guys that helped them win a Super Bowl in 2001.
That 3-4-4-3 inefficiency. Because it was a defensive inefficiency that he smelled and said, let's do this.
Right. So it was, you know, let's get the outside linebacker types like Vrabel, as opposed to paying through the nose for a true 4-3 defensive end to fit that scheme that everybody across the league is running. So he's won that way before. And I wonder if he looked at this team post Brady and said, well, the way for us to capitalize on market inefficiencies is because the league has gone so pass happy because there's so many small linebackers across the league that are playing three downs. Let's just run the ball to death. We'll have a good offensive line. We'll have a good running game. We'll have a fullback. And that's how we'll kill teams. And it kind of worked for them in 2018, Tom. That's kind of how they won the Super Bowl. So I think that's kind of, if you're looking for how do we get here, that to me is in my opinion, how they got here.
I think a measure of it has to do as well with ego and ownership of who's the most important person on the team. And that doesn't exclude Brady. I think really, as I consider this, and in doing so, Phil, in changing the model of your offense in 2018 to become much less Brady reliant, you are ensuring that going into the next phase, you're not going to be overly held hostage to some degree by the quarterback position. You're not going to be spending $24, $28, $32 million on a quarterback. What you're going to do is you're going to solve it by taking care of that market inefficiency. And when we talk about ego, I'm going to go back to something we talked about on our conference call for pregame live, which we'll be doing obviously on Sunday before the Jets game. You know, 2016, after they beat the Falcons, the Patriots were in a situation where Tom Brady said, I've won 5 Super Bowls. No one else has ever done this. Not Montana, not Bradshaw, not Aikman, nobody. And someone close to him at that time said, things are going to be different now. I was like, what does that mean? They're going to be different. Well, what that meant was Tom's brand was going to be promoted into 2017, the year 2017. And it was. Out came Tom versus Time. Out came the TB12 handbook. You know, much more open and a greater effort to market himself. That was never checked with Bill. Whether or not Tom was entitled to do that or not, I think we can all agree he made a lot of sacrifices to the team and played for less. And at that point, he's like, you know what? Time to do something for Tom. But once you kind of drop that in Bill's lap and you know how Bill is, his ego is going to cause his back to stiffen up and say, what the hell is this? This isn't how we do things. And that really set the stage for a 2017 that then evolved into Gronk and Belichick being at odds. That evolved into having a very dysfunctional group on the coaching staff who some guys wanted out, some guys wanted to stay. There was an effort to get both Caserio and Austin Fort. McDaniels was hired elsewhere and backed out. Patricia left. And then in that 2018 offseason, the Patriots are still lowballing Brady. Brady wants to leave, tells Robert Kraft, I want to be released from my contract. They put that fire out. Meanwhile, Belichick's trying to trade Gronk. It really gets sideways with that. And I know I'm going on here with what the problem is, but people started taking things personally. And I really think that that attributes is at least in part some of the reason that the team went the way it did. not going to pay Tom an amount. We're going to grudgingly trade Jimmy Garoppolo. When Tom comes to the table in 2018, we're not going to give him that two-year contract. So that clash of egos made it impossible for the team to set a course for what they wanted to be post-Brady. And then when Brady said, I'm not coming back, I think the Patriots were a little surprised by that. So those are some of the underlying things beyond Cyrus Jones and Jawan Williams and N'Keal Harry that I think you could trace this to as well, those amorphous energy things. What do you guys think of that? Am I being too touchy-feely or what?
No, I mean, that was pretty in-depth, like going all the way back to what you did. I mean, again, I was still playing at that time, so I wasn't as connected to the team in 17 and 18 and all the history that took place. And when you bring all that stuff up, yes, it can be disruptive to an organization and egos can clash. And, you know, I think Tom, too, being the epitome of the Patriot way, you know, always taking less money, always saying the right things, letting coach MF him in front of the entire team or hold him accountable like he does to the last guy on the roster. You know, he was that guy. And so for him, when he goes out and starts branding himself and doing all that, it probably left a bad taste in Bill Belichick's mouth. And it probably was more, there was more tension there than there normally was. But it's interesting and fascinating to hear, like, just the storyline that what went on with Gronk, with TB, with Tom, TB12, all that stuff, and sit here and listen to it. But it definitely probably had an impact for sure on relationships in the organization.
Sorry, Maddie. Meanwhile, Phil Roberts trying to, you guys need to get along. And then they win that Super Bowl in 2018, which in some ways validates everything that Bill was doing, Phil. Yeah. I mean,
well, yeah. And I want to amend a couple of the things that I said. I mean, number one, you know, in terms of selling out, you know, it goes beyond, you know, paying through the nose for one or two players or spending a first round pick on N'Keal Harry or paying for Antonio Brown. It's trading picks for veterans. It's selling out for Bill Belichick is trading picks for Danny Shelton and Jason McCourty. It's not being the highest bidder for the top receiver on the market. And that, right, that worked for them. They were a veteran team. They were one of the oldest teams in the league for several years running. Brandon and it was Cooks. Because they wanted to capitalize. They had a quarterback that had a window and they had a window as a unit and they wanted to max out on that. So that I do understand, and I do credit Bill Belichick because I think that's part of the reason they won that Super Bowl in 2018. But to go against the sort of market inefficiency, the success of that approach in 2018, Tom, how did they win that Super Bowl? Well, first they get there because Tom Brady's making throws all over the lot in Kansas City. And then when you get to the actual Super Bowl itself, you had a great defense and that carried you. But you weren't in scoring position until Tom Brady, a Hall of Fame quarterback, made a throw to a Hall of Fame pass catcher and Rob Gronkowski to get you in the end zone. So, you know, there are little offshoots to all of these different theories and storylines that we can point to. But I think we've hit on the major ones in terms of where they're sitting now has been a process and it's gone back years.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is going to be Matt's time to shine. This is about offense we're going to get into now. And whether or not the Patriots have the belly to morph into what they have to morph into. If you look at the playoffs as they currently stand, you know, someone down in Foxborough pointed out to me this week, every single team in the playoffs has either a first-round pick at quarterback or a future Hall of Famer, i.e. Rivers or Brady or Roethlisberger.
Fitzpatrick. So,
Fitzpatrick, you said?
Yeah, future Hall of Famer.
Future Hall of Famer. Fitzmagic.
Duh.
What are you looking at for me for? But meanwhile, the Patriots, they get a first-rounder, a quarterback, but he can't throw it overhand more than 11 yards with any great degree of accuracy. And we're talking about bringing that quarterback back to the team. This was, again, something we talked about on our our conference call for pregame live. And it dawned on me as we're doing that, how unimaginative would it be for the Patriots if they brought Cam Newton back? And for all Bill's brilliance on the defensive side of the ball and all the innovation he has wrought and all the great game plans that are in Canton that he's brought about, the Patriots can't pull the trigger on some of these positions, tight end, wide receiver, even quarterback, since 2017. I don't know if they know what they want to be going forward. They did dumb into Brady. God bless him for figuring it out. But that offense is Brady and McDaniels, Matt. What will the Patriots look like? Do they have the belly to morph into what every other good team in the NFL is if McDaniels is gone and they have to restart?
See, that's going to be the question. Is if McDaniels is there, I do believe that they will figure out a way, because I think that the offense, the structure, everything changed because you have to play to the strength of your team, right? And everything that they did this year, we can analyze it, we can do this, but the reason they're in 21 personnel is because, look, they don't have the horses to go out there and get into 11 personnel and spread the field and go consistently win in the pass game. So what do? You hide those inconsistencies. You go play action pass. The one thing that was the issue with Cam, I think, is also – the simple fact that throughout his career, he's been in the shotgun, right? Mm-hmm. That's how he played the game. And now when he came here to the Patriots, you see most of his play action passes and everything that he does is underneath center. So that's another thing that maybe he just doesn't see the field as well from underneath the center and going through play action as reads that he hasn't done a lot of throughout his career as well. But I mean, whoever they bring in, they've got to address that position, right? I don't think bringing back Cam, that would be unimaginative. Whatever you just said, right? I can't even speak right now, but it wouldn't be right for the team to bring him back, because what value does he bring? Is he going to come in and be a $5 million backup? I mean, to have a $5 million backup and pay a guy like that to come in and be what, possibly a gadget guy down in the red zone, third down, do that? Because he's not going to be your starting quarterback if you have anybody capable in the pass game there that can go out and throw the football. But you also have to address, like, you've got to address the issues at the wide receiver position, please. They tried to do it at the tight end position. Those guys have not had any production. 15 catches in the entire season. You know, most receivers have 14. There's been receivers this year that have had 14 catches in one game.
It's wild, too.
Looking like a real quarterback. Did you hear his voice get, like,
desperate?
A lot more volume, and the desperation was palpable. Can we get a receiver, please?
Here? Well, look at, fellas, look, in 2008.
You're right.
I mean, 2008, I played, okay? And I hadn't played since, I never started a game in college. I played, my last start was in high school. Okay, now, yes, did I feel like I was capable of throwing the ball, doing all that? But you guys also saw the preseason. Like, I had needed to develop. I need to get in there. I need to play. Why were we so effective? They surrounded me with Wes Welker, with Randy Moss. We had Ben Watson. Lawrence Maroney was a run back. We had a good offensive line. So a lot of my things that I was deficient at, they could actually help me, because I had Kevin Falk in the backfield in the first game. I remember going out against the Jets, and they had a lot of design plays to go work one-on-one with the linebacker that I knew Kevin Falk was going to win. Slip screens to Wes Welker. Now, as I got more comfortable in that season and I understood what I was like really being asked, and they expanded that game plan, I got better and we all started to really play at a high level, right? But early on, it's because of the people around me. It wasn't just because I was comfortable in the system and knew all that. It was the guys that around me that could get open, make plays, and I had confidence in that. And that confidence just grew and grew and grew as the season went on. So if you put a capable guy in there with Josh McDaniels, with a good supporting cast, that's just one example of what he can do and what you can do to be successful.
So it's okay then to go tight end and wide out in the first round perhaps and still find that guy who might be Matt Castle-ish? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Like, I mean, you could.
We're going to flip out if they don't take a quarterback in the first round, but maybe they don't necessarily have to. And this is something Phil has said many times.
Right. I mean, you don't have to, but you also have to look at the free agency market this year, right? You got Ryan Fitzpatrick, Mitch Trubisky. I know that Mariota's still under contract. You might have a shot at a guy like Stafford, but I mean, that's – yeah, Jacoby Brissett, right. So you're not looking at a long list of guys that you're sitting in here and want to just plug in at that starter position, right? It's one of those guys, like a transitional guy, like Cam was last year, that you're sitting there going, he's still on the market. Hey, this would be a good guy. He potentially still can come in, play, give us a spark, all those things. But if you're going to do it, you're probably going to have to draft somebody, and you're going to have to say that you're going to make a commitment that this guy's got to come in and play. But again, then that means in free agency, you better go out and get the guys like a Keenan Allen or a Marvin Jones or both of those guys and pay and have a complimentary receiving group that will come out and play.
Matt, I want to ask you, you know, obviously somebody who knows Bill Belichick, who knows Josh McDaniels, how those guys approach their jobs and how they look at offensive football. Say they do invest highly in a rookie quarterback, and say their only other option is somebody like Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So a clear stopgap only, 1 year only kind of guy. I'm someone who's said, because I look at some of these rookie quarterbacks, first round guys that have come in and had success almost immediately, I've said the NFL game now is more conducive to rookie quarterbacks than it ever has been before, because offenses are willing to adapt to these guys. And because it is a little bit easier to play offense than it was when you were playing, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, like obviously that's well established. But do you see Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick being willing to turn to a rookie quarterback early in his career? Or do they view it as, well, we're going to run our offense, and to have a good grasp of our offense, we're putting you on the Castle plan, or we're putting you on the Garoppolo plan, and we really don't want you playing until year two at the earliest, maybe not even year three or year four.
Yeah. Well, the only reason why myself and Garoppolo even played was because Tom got hurt, right? Or Tom was suspended in Garoppolo's case. So the fact of the matter is they never had, like, I don't think it was by choice that they always drafted us, and we were part of the developmental program and the tutelage of Josh McDaniels and Brady. And the only reason, like I said, I played was because he got hurt. But it's not, their plan usually isn't like, well, we're going to develop them, maybe get them good enough and give them enough time in preseason to make a few trades or something like that. But if they draft somebody high, they've never been in this position for the last, you know, the entire time he's coached, where they draft somebody high at that position. They didn't have to, right? And say that you've got to play right away and not have the opportunity to sit behind Brady, learn, and just that natural maturation process that takes place for a lot of backup quarterbacks. So if they do draft high, it'll be interesting because he's going to need to play. And the only thing that I can think of is when Josh McDaniels was in Denver, they drafted Tim Tebow, right? And pretty soon there, I mean, they started the year with Kyle Orton, and then they ended the year with Tim Tebow, right?
And they worked Tebow in. They gave him like a series or two every game, you know, starting midseason or so. I remember this. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the only comparison that I could think of where Josh McDaniels has been in a situation where he drafted a guy high and then worked him in that manner, you know?
I take McDaniels out of this. Look at Bill Belichick. Really, since he was with the Giants. When he was with the Giants, Jeff Hostetler, who might have been a third-round pick, came in and won them a Super Bowl.
Oh, yeah.
When Phil Simms, a first-round pick, got hurt. When Bill Parcells came to New England, he had a quarterback in Drew Bledsoe, who was the first overall pick, but every time Belichick coached against Bledsoe, he undressed him because he understood his limitations. When Belichick was in Cleveland, he had a very, I think Bernie Kosar was supplemental. Either way, when he had enough of him, he benched him, put in a guy named Todd Philcox, who was just one of the worst quarterbacks I've ever seen. And when he wanted to patch that position, he found a former first round pick overall, Vinny Testaverde.
Vinny
rehabbed his career. When he got here, he said, I'm not going to deal with this first round pick who's an absolute albatross to my salary cap in Bledsoe. I know he can be undressed. I've done it before. And once Brady emerged, he's like, bam, I can fix it. Then he gets Brady hurt in 2008. Not Bill gets him hurt. That's, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he finds a guy in Matt who hadn't played, as Matt just said, since high school. Finds Garoppolo at FBS level, whatever the hell that's called. You know, it's, there is more evidence that Bill Belichick has. And then if you look at this year or last year, he tortured the shit out of Baker Mayfield. He beat the hell out of Kyler Murray. He held his own against Pat Mahomes. Bill Belichick is not going to, what do you take from all that evidence I just put out there, Phil?
I honestly
argue against a first round pick.
Well, so listen, it's different now than it was when Phil Cox was playing.
Does Bill believe that? That's the thing.
I think even he would acknowledge that. But that doesn't mean that he still values the position the same way the rest of the league does. He may look at Patrick Mahomes and say, whatever it is, that new contract that he just signed, where it's
almost a half
45, billion. 50 million, you know, it's half a billion dollars. Like, he's looking at that and saying, are you kidding me? If I get a good enough defense on the field and he's down his top receiver, like, we're holding him to 13 points. Like, that's just, I'm going to be able to do that. So I think you can believe both things, that quarterback is probably more important than it's ever been. And some of these guys are incredibly hard to defend because they're next level athletes now. While at the same time, we're not sacrificing our ability to build a team just because we want to get this one guy. But Matt, that to me would almost be an argument for drafting a guy high, because you don't have to pay these guys. And that's the cheat code. That's the cheat code in 2020. Get this good quarterback on a rookie contract, pay everybody else. And maybe he never wants to pay that guy, Matt. Maybe, like, you know, 5 years into your contract, say they draft Trey Lance, you know, 5 years from now, he may say, listen, Trey, it's just not worth it to us to pay you $35 million a year. So we're going to go draft another guy. And that might be the cycle that you have to go through if you're Bill, but that to me would say, okay, if you don't want to pay him, then you definitely have to draft him high almost.
Right. I mean, that's the part of it too. Right now, the way that it's, you know, slated, and when you get drafted, it's not like the old contracts, right? Where the first overall, the second, third are making $50 million guaranteed without even stepping on the field, right? These guys are now, you know, they're slated to wear how much they make, and you're on a 4 or 5 year deal. So you get these guys cheap. You don't have to go out and pay one of these high market valued quarterbacks that's going to be a free agent or that you want to trade for and pay this enormous salary. You're going to actually, he'll be one of those guys that you go, good. Like, we got him cheap, and now we've secured that position on our team, on our offense, the most important one, with a low salary cap hit. And now we can go out and pay other guys. I agree with you. Like, if you can go that route, find a guy that you like and that fits your system, 100%.
It's just hard to find quarterbacks anywhere else, Tom. Like, if you're depending on getting a guy in the fourth round and then paying him like a backup and having him continue to be your starter for like 7 or 8 years, it's just, it can't work that way.
But the real cheat code is to start mining through the Trubiskys and the Haskinses and the Rosens and the Minshews, all of these guys, and the Mariotas, all of these guys, Tannehills, you know, that's where you start kicking through the garbage that other people have thrown out or put at the end of their driveway and said, take it away. That's where you don't have to go through the Trey Lance, figure out how to open a checking account in Massachusetts and what a rotary is.
I had to do that.
It's
tough when you try to open a checking account and the rotary system. I mean, what in the world?
And you're a smart guy.
Maybe. Not today. My brain's not working today.
But think about that. So why not go for Mitch Trubisky or, you know, not Dwayne Haskins? I think he's a little too off.
Well, two. I think number one is those guys are costing more than your rookies. So, you know, if you're getting Trubisky, you got to pay him $7 million. You're not paying him.
Fine. That's not a big
deal. Sam Darnold's late in his rookie contract. He's scheduled to make less than $1 million in base salary next year.
That's like, okay.
It's incredible value. Marcus Mariota's making 10 next year.
But you're going to get what you pay for with these guys in terms of Trey Lance or Justin Fields. I mean, Justin Fields.
No.
Until 2023.
Don't tell me you get what you pay for with Justin Herbert. You're getting way more than that. You're getting way more than that with Joe Burrow. You're getting way more than that with Lamar Jackson. You're getting way more than that with Deshaun Watson and Patrick Mahomes on their rookie deals. Like, you have to pay. So, like, somebody
but
like
you James incur Witt- risk. You incur risk in a learning.
Totally. But what I would say, what to you is the greater risk? Like, who do you feel better about having success in the NFL in 2021? Since we've been mentioning his name, Trey Lance or Jameis Winston, Trey Lance or Mitchell Trubisky. To me, it's almost a toss up and one guy's way cheaper.
Right. And that's what you're saying. It's almost a toss up, but at the same time, the Trey Lances of the world, he's way cheaper than those other guys because they're going to have a higher market value just because they've been in the league. Jameis Winston's a guy that's played, was a starter, and we know that he had his issues when he's in the 30 for 30 club, you know, with the 30 TDs, 30 interceptions. But at the same time, he's going to have market value. And people are going to look at him and say, you know, we're going to give this guy, he's a former first round pick, and he is a guy that can still play. He's young, and he's going to want a significant amount of money, where Trey Lance, you could say, make the argument that he's going to come in and he'll be a player in this league, but it might take some time to develop. So that's, you also have to address the fact that you have to bring somebody in that's capable enough to maybe get, like you said, the Fitzpatricks of the world that are going to get you maybe through the first part of a season, if they're willing to do that.
I really like the idea of Mariota, even at 10. Mariota in a draft pick. Mariota in a draft pick, because then you're paying like a little over 10 for like two, I would say, high upside rolls of the dice. That to me would make sense.
With Trey Lance, for instance, as opposed to Mitch Trubisky, game it out for 6 years. If Trubisky works for 6 years, you know, has a good year, you re-up him again, and now you're, whatever, $18 million average, you know, 3-54, something stupid, whatever. And you can steal more years from him. Trey Lance is going to be starting to agitate for a $377 million contract if he works out pretty soon thereafter. So you're supposing that your plan at quarterback is going to succeed and the team will improve. It's just I'm not advocating for the other guys, but if Bill Belichick still believes, I don't know if he doesn't have the belly to make a move at tight end, quarterback, and wide receiver, or if he just doesn't think that those are positions that even matter to spend collateral on. Whichever it is, I'm trying to just highlight this might be why he would think this is a good way to do it. It is wild, though, when you look at the resistance to capturing high-end talent, whether it be through the draft or free agency, at all three of those positions, which are the positions which are going to dominate these playoffs, Matt. These playoffs are going to be dominated by those positions, except for Tennessee and Derrick Henry. But still, you're going to have Ryan Tannehill and A.J. Brown.
Look at Kansas City, right? Kansas City with Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, Mecole Hardman. You look at Pittsburgh, Juju Smith-Schuster. You got Chase Claypool, Johnson. I mean, if you look
Allen
up
and Diggs.
Allen, you know, we just watched that on display, right? Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, John Brown, Knox. I mean, you go up and down the lineup of playoff teams. And like you said, maybe discounting just Tennessee, but even Tennessee, right? They got A.J. Brown. Then they also have Corey Davis, who's a first-round draft pick there as well. And then they've got Jonnu Smith, a great tight end at that position. So they've got talent on that team. And the fact of the matter is, all those teams that we're talking about, playoff caliber teams, they all have that same formula of weapons, right? They've got multiple weapons at the wide receiver position. They have capable tight ends. A lot of them have running backs as well. I mean, even the Colts, who's on the outside looking in right now, there's from a balance standpoint of a team, defensively, offensively, they don't have a lot of weaknesses or holes, but at the same time, I mean, they're a really good team too on the offensive side of the ball. So you've got to address the issues that are glaring at you if you're going to be successful and compete against these guys.
And what are we not talking about with those teams? For a lot of them, it's defense.
Mm-hmm.
You're not talking about the Chiefs defense winning them games. You're not talking about the Titans defense for sure winning them games. You might be with the Steelers, but we've seen what's happened with them in recent weeks. It's just, I go back to a quote that Nick Saban actually had in October. And this is college football. It's different from the NFL, but we talked about on this podcast, it's sort of a trickle up game now. You know, even some of the high school stuff goes to college, and now the college stuff we're seeing in the NFL. And so Saban in October says, it used to be that good defense beats good offense. Good defense doesn't beat good offense anymore. It's, you know, and then he goes into specific examples where they played Georgia, but he says that's not the way it used to be. It used to be if you had a good defense, other people weren't going to score. You were always going to be in the game. I'm telling you, it ain't that way anymore.
That's
Nick Saban. I mean, he is defense through and through. He is one of Bill Belichick's closest friends. I'm sure they have had this conversation or something revolving around this kind of idea. And so the question is, what do you do to address your team and address your roster so that it can compete in today's game?
All right. Really great conversation. Let's finish it up here by talking a little bit about this Jets matchup, because we've talked about the Dolphins and the Bills as perhaps hatching a path for the Patriots with the way they built their teams in 2015 and beyond to become the contenders they've been. the Jets would be a cautionary tale as to what not to do. But here's what's wild, guys. When you look at some of the draftees that they've had, from Sheldon Richardson to Leonard Williams to free agent signings like CJ Mosley to Jamal Adams on the back end and Marcus May to, on the outside, Denzel Mims. Chris Herndon's a good tight end. He's a fourth round pick. But Le'Veon Bell, a free agent signee. Why isn't it working there? First round quarterback, top three. What is it, Matt, that is, what is the lesson to be learned and what's gone wrong there?
Yeah, it's hard to say because like you said, from a draft standpoint, they've got guys on both sides of the ball, like good players, right? And they've also brought some people in as well. And it's got to be something to do with culture, coaching, Adam Gase. Well, I mean, all these things come into play, right? And he hasn't been able to get the best out of his players. And yes, they've won their last two games, they're playing better. But at the same time, you know, there's just no consistency. And when things start going downhill and you don't win early, like, it's got to be the head coach. It's got to come from your coaching staff and the leaders on that team to step up and change the direction that your team's going at that point to make it, to do the right thing, right, in terms of making progress. And they couldn't do it. And Sam Darnold's been kind of a victim of circumstance at times, right? With, they talked about the bad offensive line, the receivers, this, that, and the other, but he's a talented kid as well. So you, it's mind boggling to me that that team has not won more games than what they have.
Does ownership matter? Cause that's been unstable there as well.
Yeah. To me, ownership doesn't play as big a role in the player's mind, to be honest with you. I mean, you're talking about facilities and what, you know, do they take care of you in terms of meals? Do they give you the opportunity to go out and, you know, bring a masseuse in to take care of your bodies during a tough rigors of the season, that kind of stuff. But overall, it's more, you're talking about coaching staff and the people than it is, and the day-to-day guys that you see on a day-to-day, than it is anything else in terms of ownership.
I think when you look at what's gone on with them lately, Tom, you know, if you start with ownership and the Johnsons and the transfer when Woody left and Christopher Johnson took over in 2017, they're about to be on their third head coach since then. They're already on their second general manager. So there's just, it's hard to have consistency no matter who you're picking at the top of the draft. And you rattled off some good players that they've had. But if you actually go, and I have their, I'm not going to run through every draft pick they've taken, but their drafts are pretty ugly after some of those very first picks. You know, it looks like last year they hit on a couple players with Mekhi Becton and Denzel Sims. The year before that, it was Quinnen Williams, who looks like a great player. They basically got nothing after him in 2019. In 2017, they got, or sorry, in 2018, they got Sam Darnold, who, you know, I think we all had high hopes for. After that, you've got very little in terms of like consistent starting caliber talent. 2017, it's Jamal Adams and Marcus May, who are two good safeties, but we know one of those guys is gone. You know, Leonard Williams from several years ago, now he's gone. So they're not even able to hold on to some of their best players because they're moving on elsewhere. And the other big names, you know, it's all well and good to have, but look at CJ Mosley, how many games he's played and how much money he's been paid. Look at Le'Veon Bell, what he gave them in terms of production and how much money he got paid. They didn't spend wisely and they didn't draft well enough. They hit okay up at the top, but this, their team, honestly, and I think Patriots fans hate this word. I think they do because they like talent, but their team is a good argument for having a deep football team. Like depth matters. Mm-hmm. And they haven't had any for several years now.
Well, this is going to be part of the chore that the Patriots are going to address in this offseason. And I think it's, we're obliged to consider, what if the Patriots don't attack this offseason with a cogent plan that starts to yield a palpable sense that the team is improving? What if you are in next October, November, December, and the team's record is still 500 or worse, and the quarterback situation doesn't seem to be any better, and they're in clearly a reboot but not going anywhere? Is there a point at which Robert Kraft might say, could you get Bill on the line? I want to talk to Coach about a few things.
That's pretty good.
Thank you. Not necessarily a come to Jesus meeting with Bill, but what are we doing around here? Phil, last week we brought this up as to whether or not Bill Belichick could ever be put on the clock coaching for his job. is an extreme way of putting it, or having the screws put to him a little bit. And I think he can. I think that Robert Kraft would be at some point able to say to that particular manager or this particular business, what's going on? Matt, you thought that was insanity, not the way I just couched it, but just in the basic Bill Belichick might have the screws put to him.
Like, will they have a conversation? I'm sure they'll have a conversation, yeah. But at the same time, I mean, they've been working together for what, 21 years now? 21 years. So they have a relationship. And Bill has brought that organization along with all of his teams. I'm not discrediting anybody, but yep. Look, 6 Super Bowls, 9 Super Bowl appearances. Is that correct? Yep. And then after one down season in 20 years, maybe 2, but we're speculating that it's going to be 500 next year. Even if it is 500, do you go immediately and just say, you know what, we got to go in a different direction. This guy just doesn't know what he's doing anymore. You guys are out of your mind.
No, you're right.
You guys are so spoiled. You guys are all so spoiled out there. You know, happy new year. Here's the 2020 fire Bill Belichick. That would be great, guys. What in the world are you guys even talking about? This is nuts. The greatest coach that ever coached a game. He's got a new quarterback. He's got no weapons. I mean, on the offensive side of the ball, they struggle a little bit. They still won 6 games, which I was blown away by this season. But you know what? We should get rid of that guy. He doesn't have what it takes anymore.
Honey, fire up the hot tub. It's New Year's Eve.
Let's go.
I don't think look, obviously that's not what Tom is saying.
Thank you, Phil.
Not what I would say. I do find that dynamic interesting only in one situation. Because I think I honestly believe this. I've asked Robert Kraft about it multiple times. Lord knows Tom's talked to him about it quite a bit. Just about the decision making on the roster. He's giving it. It's Bill's roster. It's Bill. He's done a pretty good job. That's mm-hmm. kind of the party line. He's done a pretty good job for about 20 years. So we're going to let him do his thing. But at quarterback, Matt, I do wonder, because that's such an important face of the franchise position. If you're about to make a real investment there, whether it's paying Jimmy Garoppolo, say 20 some odd million dollars a year to come back, or whether you're about to make a quarterback your first round pick. Is there, and I honestly don't know. I would lean towards no, that really it is going to be, everything's going to be Bill's decision. But I wonder if like what the conversation would be there. I think if you're paying a lot of money, Tom, I would think the owner's going to be involved in some way, shape or form there, as he would be with any position when it's, mm-hmm. you know, you're talking about those kinds of dollars, but because it is just different from every other spot on the roster, I wonder, just how many conversations or how in depth they go about that spot before that call gets made.
Well, it's not a lifetime appointment, but if anybody is going to get damn close to having a lifetime appointment, I think it will be Bill Belichick, but it'll be interesting to watch next year. Again, this was not an effort to say, should Bill Belichick be on the hot seat? It was just such a tremendous response from Matt last week on Pregame Live that I wanted to see if we could get it out of him again. And
I think we did.
We did.
Mission accomplished.
Hey, happy new year, everybody. Thank you for sticking around. Say goodbye to the skull crusher, John Henry, who puts this together every week. And thanks for being with us.
Happy new year.
Happy new year.